Good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Dylan Wan, and I'm a PhD student with Jane Deaver and Eric Heke up at Texas Tech University up in Lubbock. And I want to present a little bit this morning on some of the work I've done for my doctoral program related to host plant thrips resistance and its potential utility in new cotton cultivar development. So as a quick background, host plant pest resistance is a key component of nearly every IPM system. We've seen this specifically with the rapid adoption of BT technology being a boon for arthropod pest management and managing the Heliothis complex of pests in a number of different crops worldwide. But it can also be a key component for integrated thrips management in a cotton production system, especially now in the post-timic era that we find ourselves in. We do a lot of direct working sprays for management on the Texas High Plains for thrips. So that's something we'd like to reduce if at all possible. In some of our own in-house IPM evaluations, we've observed up to a 30% reduction in thrips feeding injury from the use of resistant germplasm alone. And that's just with some old varieties that we already had, nothing that we've developed intentionally to be thrips resistant. So that opens up the door or a potential window for maybe readjusting some of our spray thresholds for growers who are managing thrips in their cotton systems. Typically, or right now in the Texas High Plains, we have a 1 thrips per true leaf spray threshold. And with the implementation of resistant germplasm, you might could get away with up to 2 plants or 2 thrips per true leaf on a plant. So any kind of reduction there from implementing host plant resistance would be excellent. So, of course, reduced sprays in a commercial production system reduces labor costs, chemical costs, fuel costs, and reduces your overall chemical input to your system as a grower. So that's something we like to shoot for. Now, in our program, we've been conducting a number of different screening and cultivar development efforts since 2009, but we quickly realized that as breeders, we need a lot more information regarding the overall nature and kind of genetic behavior of host plant thrips resistance in cotton specifically. There's been some work done on it in peanuts, onions, cowpea, a few other crops, but not necessarily cotton. So that's something we're interested in, and we figured other people would be interested in that too. So this is exactly what we try to achieve to some extent with this set of studies. So what we looked at was how host plant thrips resistance segregates genetically in a few different cotton populations. We want to look at the heritability of that resistance and then also look at a real field example to see what kind of actual gain from selection we could anticipate with this type of resistance. So let's look first at the segregation of this trait. We conducted a series of greenhouse and field trials in 2011 and 2012. These were irrigated field trials, where we first planted an interspecific F2 population of greenhouse in 2011. We utilized this cross, an interspecific cross, where the CA2266 was our hirsutum parent, and we used this Texas 110 as our resistant Pima parent. That's a Barbadan succession from the Texas A&M collection. Has the highest thrips tolerance that we've observed in our own screening evaluation. So we decided to use that, planted it in a completely randomized design in the greenhouse, and then we elevated our ambient thrips populations in the greenhouse. Some of y'all can't see this, but there will be some other pictures in a second. Utilizing this wheat host method, published by Mark Arnold out of our program a year or two ago, essentially you grow a wheat host in the greenhouse, spray it with glyphosate, and it dumps all the thrips, or most of the thrips from that wheat onto the germinating cotton seedling. So it's an excellent free choice evaluation. Then in 2012, we also planted another interspecific F2 population at the field level. Again, these are irrigated trials. We ended up using a different population with a different Pima parent. We used Cobalt, which is, for some of you all remember, that's an old commercial Pima cultivar that has high tolerance to thrips feeding. We ended up using that as a little bit more stable Pima parent, which I'll talk about more here in a second. We thought that would be a more favorable genetic background for that trait. And we also planted that in a completely randomized design, evaluated under ambient field thrips pressure at that location. For our phenotyping, we phenotyped all of our individual F2 plants utilizing a 1-9 visual rating scale at the 4th to 5th true leaf stage. The scale is pretty simple. 1 was a completely necrotic plant from thrips feeding, and then a 9 was a completely undamaged plant, and there's a continuum in between. And then our allelism ratios were determined by using chi-square analyses of those individual plant ratings. We ended up classifying a 1-3 rating as a susceptible plant and a 7-9 rating as a resistant plant, and then tested those against as many single or two-gene segregation ratios that I could find in the literature and tested for significance or goodness of fit at a 0.05 level. So here's the results of those chi-square analyses. There's a lot of information here, but basically what I did was, for the sake of brevity, just included these two single gene ratios. I ended up testing a number of different ratios, but just put those there for now. For presentation's sake, here's this first family we tested in the greenhouse, the second family at the field level. As it shows on the slide, we saw they're significantly different from what the expected ratios would be for a single or two-gene ratio. And so that led us to believe that there's a continuous distribution of thrips tolerance, at least among these interspecific populations, suggesting quantitative inheritance of that trait. So continuing on, we looked at the heritability of that trait. We conducted greenhouse trials in 2013 and 2014. There's a better picture of that wheat setup. It works real nicely. We evaluated five different interspecific families, including the parents from each family and the respective F2 populations, and planted all those in a randomized complete block design there in the greenhouse. And again, these are all interspecific crosses utilizing that tolerance from barbadensium. The five families we evaluated were here on the screen. Three of them were half-sibs, each containing that same cobalt-resistant parent, and then these other two were half-sibs having the common Texas 110 parent. So we wanted to kind of get an idea of how that broke out heritability-wise among different families. We also included resistant and susceptible controls, and again evaluated each individual plant for thrips tolerance at the 4th to 5th tree leaf stage utilizing our 1 to 9 rating scale. For heritability, we utilized the components of variance method, broad sense heritability being a function of, or a proportion of the genetic variance, and it's how much of a proportion of the phenotypic variance it is of the total variance. Phenotypic variance being a function of genetic variance and environmental variance. And we calculated or estimated environmental variance off of the mean of the parental variance, since this was conducted in the same at the same time in the greenhouse with multiple generations. And this was modeled actually after a study that Steve Hague and his group published a few years ago in Cotton Science, looking at various fiber quality traits. Looking at the results of our broad sense heritability, right off the bat, these heritability values weren't as high as I initially anticipated, but they fall within the normal realm of what you'd expect for a quantitatively inherited trait. But what I did notice was that you can see here, we did see a notable difference between the cobalt families and then the Texas 110 families. There's a notably higher heritability in the cobalt families than the 110 families. And I should have had pictures of that nursery with the 110 families. But the 110 crosses were essentially segregating for everything you could imagine. It was cool to see from a genetic standpoint, but I think what happened is it introduced a lot of background noise from a phenotyping standpoint that masked phenotypically seeing some of the genetic effects that we were looking for. So it was a good lesson to learn, because in both of our or both of these Pima parents are actually used in our thrips nursery that we manage in, on a yearly basis. So it's good to know the difference between those two parentages. So that leads us to our gain from selection evaluation. Last but not least, we ended up collecting data from a separate mapping study that was occurring in 2012 and 2013. These are irrigated field trials. So use the data from and this one interspecific family was one of the families that we evaluated in the heritability experiment. This was one of the cobalt families. Again, those crosses tend to be a little bit more stable since that was actually a commercial Pima variety back in the day. We ended up planting a F2 population in 2012 at our Lubbock, Texas research site. We phenotyped every one of those F2 individuals using our 1 to 9 rating scale again, and collected the seed from those F2 individuals and replanted them as F3 progeny rows in 2013 at our halfway Texas location. And then we phenotyped those F3 progeny rows on a row-by-row basis using that same 1 to 9 scale. So we didn't do individual rating, we did a row-by-row rating. And for our actual gain from selection calculation, we utilized this method published by Pelos et al. In 1991, where essentially we chose the top 1, 5, and 10% of F2 individuals that we phenotyped in 2012. Again, we had ratings for every one of those plants, so it's pretty easy to partition down to the top 1, 5, and 10%. And then of those individuals, we took the corresponding F3 data. I don't know if you can see that equation there. We plugged that data in for those selected, or the corresponding F3 progenies to those selected F2s into the mean of the selected value here, and subtracted the mean of that F3 population, and then divided by the mean of the F3 population. So that gives you a nice, very intuitive estimate of what the actual gain would have been over the bulk population from what you selected in the F2. So taking a look at our results, this is a table showing our selection intensity. Again, we took the top 1, top 5, and top 10% and looked at how that broke out from a gain from selection standpoint. And this is a lower gain than I would have anticipated. I think one of the issues is in 2012 when we selected out of the F2 population, we had a lot lower ambient TRIPS pressure at that location than we did in 2013. In 2013, we had very high ambient TRIPS pressure that year. So all of y'all who have had the joy of working with host plant resistance know how that goes, selecting a site with consistent pressure, what you're looking for. So in our case, we found that a 5% selection intensity yielded the greatest gain, which is only about 22%. I expected a greater gain from the 1% selection intensity, but again, in effect, I think what was happening was, given the quantitative nature of this trait, and it's more than likely a greater sensitivity to environmental conditions, that lower thrips pressure that first year was causing us to miss some of the genetic effects that we were trying to capture with a really, really intense selection pressure. And which incidentally, in our case, in our thrips nursery, we typically select at a greater intensity even than 1%, far less than 1%. So we're selecting pretty hard in that nursery, which from our standpoint, this is a good lesson to learn to potentially readjust our selection protocols and our selection intensity to maybe not select so intensely to where we're actually missing the effects, the genetic effects that we're trying to capture. And so, again, a good lesson to learn for thrips resistance, at least, is that likely we should adjust our selection protocols and selection intensity based on ambient pressure in the beginning of the growing season. The nice thing about thrips is they're out there, they're abundant at the beginning of the growing season, so you can collect them, or you can collect some plant samples, get a real good, reliable estimate of what the thrips per plant pressure is in a given field location. So something you could feasibly do at the beginning of the year, grab some samples, figure out what your pressure is, and then when it comes time a few weeks later to do your selections at the 4 to 5 true leaf stage, so you have a good idea of how intensely or not intensely you should be selecting. So I thought that was real interesting and good for us, really valuable. So to conclude, host plant thrips resistance appears to be quantitatively inherited, at least in these interspecific populations that we evaluated. And given that, its broad sense heritability ranged about 40 up to almost 70%, depending on the family. But again, it seemed that a more exotic parentage may have been confounding some of the effects that we were looking for. And finally, our gain from selection estimates at the field level, or gain from selection was greatest at a 5% selection intensity, but depended upon ambient thrips pressure. In the future, we'd like to continue this heritability work, but focus on narrow sense heritability to get an idea of the additive effects of this trait, being that it appears to be quantitatively inherited. We'd also like to compare potentially selection gains between the greenhouse and the field, to see if we can maybe have a cycle of selection in the greenhouse real early on and amp up the heritability and then move the rest of those selections out to the field. And then finally, we'd like to further elucidate the mechanism of resistance. We have a pretty good idea of what it is, but we'd like to really nail it down conclusively because we feel like that would really impact how we continue breeding for the trait. So with that, I'd like to conclude. I acknowledge Dr. Jane Deaver and Dr. Eric Hecke, my co-advisors for my PhD committee, Mark Arnold and Heather Flippin, for their tireless efforts helping with thrips research, the rest of the cotton improvement program there at Lubbock who have been instrumental in getting all of this done, and then finally the National Institute for Food and Agriculture for funding, as well as the Cooperative State Research, Education, and Extension System for HATCH funding for this project. And with that, I'll conclude and open the floor for any questions. Thank you.
We have time for one or two questions.
Yes, ma'am. The question was, she's asking, what about the 110 made it inconsistent or unstable? It has excellent thrips tolerance, but it's as photoperiodic as you can imagine. So in the greenhouse, it works. We made some crosses, or I should say Heather Flippin made some crosses with 110. We had to use a light-out shelter to make those flower to begin with. So it's great, but it segregated enough for photoperiodicity that we had a real hard time getting seed off of those F2s to do progeny testing in the F3. So with cobalt, we didn't have that problem. It worked real well.
What was the special feature of the characteristic of cobalt, which actually water resistant trips?
Okay. The question was what feature actually conferred what we thought to be thrips resistance. The literature suggests a thicker outer leaf epidermal layer or a thicker leaf cuticle or some combination of the two. And we've seen that with the 30% number I thought early on in our own IPM evaluations was looking at some of our existing germplasm that were real cold tolerant and have a real thick cuticle. And so we think that was preventing the thrips from getting down to the nice and juicy mesophyll tissue and really harming those leaves. But there is some literature in other crops that suggests some anabiosis or anti-zoonosis as well. But I think direct tolerance is going to be our best bet from a breeding standpoint. But we really want to nail that down conclusively, and we haven't had a chance to yet.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.